It's wonderful to be here this morning with ERA and to see the association going from strength to strength. Of course, it's equally special to be here to interview Sarah, who, as Ian mentioned, is one of the country's most important economic policymakers. Sarah, maybe before we delve into the economic data, if I may start with a personal question. Could you tell us a bit about your career and the journey that led you to be the Chief Economist and Assistant Governor at the RBA?
Thank you, and thank you for that wonderful introduction. It's a real pleasure to be here this morning. I spent most of my career actually in the private sector. I've always been a macroeconomist. I love economics. I'll probably go to my deathbed still talking about inflation. But I've most of it, that time in the private sector, and I joined the Commonwealth Treasury just in January 2023. So I did a year there and then moved across to the RBA. And for me, in my current role and in my previous role as well, serving the public, serving the people of Australia is it's an honour and a privilege, incredibly humbling. Really gets me out of bed every day to go into work. And I'm lucky to have an absolutely fantastic team that I work with who do their best work all the time to help me advise the board and the governor to help them make the best decision they can for the public. So it's a very motivating role to be in, an absolute privilege. And I'm very lucky. I feel very lucky every day.
Fantastic. Thank you, Sue. Well, there's been significant conjecture and debate, obviously, on the inflation outlook, particularly following the recent federal budget. I appreciate asking you to comment directly on the budget. Maybe a little bit cheeky, and I'm certainly not going to ask you to give it a rating out of 10.
Good.
I might volunteer one myself. I can't promise anything. So perhaps we can think about this through a different but still relevant lens. Mm. So the RBA expects inflation to move back within the target band of 2-3%. Not until the second half of calendar 2025, and the middle of that range by mid-2026. Obviously, this is at odds with the Treasury forecasts as were unveiled as part of the federal budget. How do you assess these forecasts in light of the significant changes in fiscal policy settings?
So one of the main differences between our forecasts and the Treasury forecasts, and of course they're different, we have different teams, we do our work independently, we talk to each other regularly, but we are independent groups, the energy rebates and the other cost of living supports that were announced in the budget. When we put our forecasts out in early May, that was before the budget, we didn't have advanced sight of that, so didn't incorporate that. And so we've had a look since, obviously, we've had the budgets handed down, not just federal, but also the WA budget and the announcement from the Queensland government on the energy rebates that are going to be available there. And broadly speaking, we agree with Treasury's analysis of what's going to happen to measured headline inflation as a result of those rebates. The ABS tell us pretty clearly, actually, what the difference is with and without rebates in the headline CPI, and so we've done our work, and we broadly agree with that assessment. So that will be incorporated in our next update in August. That's not to say that's mechanically what we're going to do to our inflation forecast. Every forecast round, we're considering all of the information that's come through, the latest data, our assessment of conditions, what's happening globally as well as locally, all of that comes together in our forecast updates, and that's what you'll get in August, but that will include those energy rebates that have been announced.
Thank you for that. So if we think about the latest CPI numbers, which have been very, very much hot off the press, so to speak, headline inflation is still close to 4%. And the underlying entrenched inflation is since about December has been around 3.5%. So are you concerned about how sticky inflation is and its sort of its persistent nature in the economy at the moment, whether it be through energy or more latterly insurance or whatever the case may be? It seems to be something that is, you know, very difficult to wash out of the economy. And I think Warren Hogan at Judo Bank said this morning that these latest figures are going to test the RBA's patience. So on that basis, how are you thinking about the inflation outlook?
Yeah, definitely hot off the press. We got the April monthly data just yesterday. So my inflation team are very busily working that through their models and doing their assessment. But to give a sort of very close and high level take, yes, you're right. The board are absolutely focused on the fact that inflation is clearly still above the target band. If you read their statement every meeting, they make that crystal clear, and that's absolutely the case. And yesterday's data did confirm that there's still strength in a number of categories that we've seen up until this point that's still there. And that coming together with some of the more volatile moves as well. We saw petrol prices were up. We expected that actually, looking at the daily data that you can get there. So clearly there's still some strength in inflation, and that's a key consideration for the board in their decision making. It's one of the many indicators that they're tracking and that we track, and that is reflected in the advice that we give. But yeah, I'd absolutely agree, inflation's still above the target, and no argument there.
So would you anticipate any changes in your outlook in the coming month or otherwise in terms of your current predictions?
Well, we're always constantly assessing the new information and updating the outlook, and that's the new data, it's new shifts in conditions overseas, as I said earlier on, and all of that comes together in our forecast update, and that's why forecasts are always changing. And equally, we're also cognizant of risks and how risks evolve as well, and that's another part of the advice that we give the board. So everything's always moving. I'm very lucky in my job. It keeps me on my toes. Economics is grey, not black and white, and you're never 100% sure how things are going to play out. So we're always humble in what we do and our assessment, and we're always alive to things changing, and this is just one example of that.
So maybe if we dig into a couple of the underlying sort of issues or thematics within the economy, mm-hmm. Particularly as they relate to the inflation outlook. So if we look at, say, the labour market, and in the May statement of monetary policy, I think the direct quote was growth in unit labour costs also remain very high, which, you know, you would interpret as indicating concerns with underlying wage inflation or ongoing wage inflation. Is there an issue with the absence of sort of productivity gains against that backdrop of what we're seeing in wages at the moment?
So unit labour costs are, that's a very technical economist term. I can only apologise for it. We do like our technical language at times. It's basically the cost of businesses of producing whatever it is you produce in terms of that labour cost. And it's a combination of what's happening to wages, what you have to pay a worker, and any change in their productivity. So if they get more productive, then you need to use less labour to produce a unit of output. And so that puts downward pressure on unit labour costs. Wages growth, if wages lift, then all other things equal, that will put upward pressure. And we're seeing some really interesting dynamics through the labour market right now. We've actually, we think that wages growth is around about its peak and is potentially coming off. And we can see some components of wages growth coming off already, particularly individual agreements. That's the wages that individuals sort of set with their workers, not set by a union agreement or by award wage or what have you. And so that's starting to soften. But equally, we are seeing that there's a bit of a productivity challenge over the last few years. We had a big cycle in productivity through COVID. There's been a rebound just recently, but in level terms, we're only sort of getting back to where we were pre-COVID. And so it's a bit of a puzzle. I would say more generally in terms of what all of that means for inflation, the way we think about it is that wages growth and inflation, they sort of have a more medium long-term relationship. They have to be consistent with one another. And so that's really where we focus in terms of that wage and productivity dynamic and how that flows through to prices. So that's why we're very watchful of it. So we're very watchful of both wages and productivity, because obviously we're looking and advising the board on when inflation gets back to target beyond today. And that's really the dynamic there. So we're mindful of productivity, and we'd all like productivity to be stronger. It means that living standards are getting better. That's a great outcome for the country. And we're putting that together with the wages outlook and everything else, and that's how it goes into our inflation forecast.
Looking at another big issue, and there's more than a few members of the audience who represent organisations exposed to the health of the consumer and households more broadly. There are many signs, certainly from Corporate Australia and the listed market, that the consumer is hurting across different aspects of the economy. Where are your expectations for consumer spending for the balance of 2024, and how do you think about monetary policy setting in the context of what's happening at the coalface with consumers?
Yeah, we can see that there are some households, some people that are really struggling right now. They're doing it tough. We can absolutely see it. Consumption, actually, we now have really good disaggregated data where we can put households into different income groups, different age groups, all those kind of slices and dices, and we can see that some groups are really struggling. And what's really telling through the data for us is that the struggle is coming through because of inflationary pressures. Prices of things going up, the wages or income not necessarily keeping up with that in the last couple of years, and that's just really squeezing some people, and they're doing it tough, and we're very mindful of that group. We can see other groups of households where everyone's battling with higher prices, of course, inflation. Some groups, if you've got a mortgage, then higher interest rates, we know that that's increasing your monthly costs. And for some groups, what we can see actually is that people are choosing to save a bit more. Higher interest rates are encouraging them to perhaps put a bit more into your offset account if you've got a mortgage, or even if you don't have a mortgage, you can earn a bit more on a term deposit or what have you. And so we can see some of that that response happening too. And so there's people are spending less not through that channel as well. So overall for households then, we think right now it's still pretty soft spending. We got the retail data last week that confirmed that still looks pretty weak. We are expecting a bit of a gradual pickup through the back half of this year. We do think that income growth will start to outpace wages growth. We've also got the tax cuts coming through, and they'll have an impact too. So all of that put together, we think, will provide a bit of support for household spending. But it will take some time. We're not expecting an immediate turnaround. And we know right now that spending trend is pretty weak, and that's pretty clear in the data.
You touched on sort of the difference in composition around the consumer. There's been some discussion recently about the generational differences in terms of how people are spending, you know, particularly older generations, baby boomers, relative to maybe younger generations, and you know, their spending patterns and how they're seeing the world and the economy, etc. Are you seeing anything in that regard in the data?
I think it's more really the way we're thinking about it is more a composition of what might be happening to your income and what's happening to your outgoings and what that means in terms of your capacity for spending and then the choices that you make. I mean, and everyone, we all have our household budgets. I know I have mine, and the bills come in and you work out what you've got left and where you spend and what you save and things. But what we're generally seeing is that if you're in a position where you don't have a mortgage, for instance, and you own your own home, then you're not really impacted by rent movements. You're not impacted by the increase in your mortgage each month. And so for you, that group maybe got a bit more space in terms of their spending. Other groups that we can see are impacted by those things. You might be a renter and you're seeing a significant increase in your rents when your contract is renewed, or if you're carrying a mortgage, then you might, over the last couple of years, you probably have seen an increase in your mortgage repayments. And so that then constrains your spending perhaps a bit more on other types of items and products. So it's more that product of circumstance that we're really tracking and thinking about, and thinking about the how many different households fit into each group and the decisions that individuals make. So we know it's tough for some groups, and we're really mindful of that. And we know other groups perhaps not as impacted, but everyone's impacted by high inflation, and that's a really good reason for the board and for us to be very focused on it.
One of the sort of, I think, contradictions in some of the data has been, to a certain extent, maybe intuitive at least, business lending in many respects has remained quite robust. Is this just a headline, and when you unpack that, it's a different story? So what's your perspective on lending to the to corporates and what that tells us about the different elements in the economy?
It has actually held up reasonably well. It did certainly went through a cycle through COVID, as you'd expect, but it's held up reasonably well, and it actually aligns with business investment trends that we're seeing. So business investment has actually been one of the drivers of the economy over the last year or so. And what we're seeing there is a number of businesses that are seeing increased demand, and we can see there's some positive demand coming through from the infrastructure projects the government's got underway, other parts of government spending too. And notwithstanding the softening in the growth rate of consumer spending, there was a strong rebound in consumer spending coming out of COVID. So putting all of that together, a number of businesses have found that it's opportune to undertake some investments. They're buying machinery and equipment. They might be investing in digital types of technology, software, new moving data and other platforms into the cloud. All of these things count as investments. And there's a number of construction projects that are underway as well, and quite a few different office blocks, warehousing, data centres, things like this that are also being built across the economy. So all of that counts as business investment, and we can see that activity. And of course, some of that, it's fairly typical for businesses to potentially take on some debt to fund that.
Great. I'd like to talk about a few of the longer range issues that are happening within business and more broadly in society, and how the RBA thinks about those in terms of longer range, medium term policy setting. Before I do that, maybe, given that we've talked through wages, productivity, household, consumer, business lending, two questions, if I may. What's the data that you're most focused on? What are the data points you're most focused on at the moment? And then maybe secondly, what is keeping you awake at night? Maybe the same answer, but
Wow, goodness. I mean, as a macroeconomist, and I love my job, I'm data hungry. I look at pretty much everything all the time. But obviously, some of those core indicators for the economy, what's happening with inflation, the labour market. We get the national accounts data next week, which is our holistic read on demand. So not just households, but businesses, government, exports as well. So all of those types of indicators definitely focused on. And we're very lucky these days as economists, there's so much more data that's more high frequency that we can get our hands on and touch a lot sooner. So some of the card spending data that our banks publish can be very timely and incredibly helpful. Retail trade data, for instance, today we get a capital expenditure survey from businesses that gives us a bit of a read on what businesses are planning for the next year, not just what they're doing right now. So we're very lucky. We have lots of different data sets that we track, and I have a fabulous team that track it and do all the analysis. That means we can advise the board on that. But in terms of what's keeping me up at night, I mean, I'm obviously very focused on inflation and those inflation dynamics. Also very focused on the international environment and how that's evolving and how that impacts us here in Australia. We're not isolated. We are a long way geographically from most other countries, but we're not isolated economically. So very focused on that global position and the dynamics there and what that might mean for us here.
Wonderful. Now, I'd like to talk to you about sort of the role of technology and specifically AI. I'm old enough to remember the Alan Greenspan's famous comments about technology productivity and what it meant for inflation, which proved in hindsight somewhat amiss. Some of his fundamental points were sort of very much relevant still to today. To what extent do you as a policymaker and does the board think through those bigger shifts that are occurring that are very much playing out in business today? AI is obviously at the top of the tree in terms of people thinking about what that may mean for jobs, for their own productivity, for their own profitability, all of those kinds of things. How do you sort of see through all of that and think about, well, what should we be thinking about, not just in the immediate term with policy, but on a 2, 5, 10-year horizon?
So I probably should say that the RBA, our policy instrument, we don't really have any impact on directly on these trends, so on how AI and other things might play out, but even on how they're adopted within businesses and things like that. So in terms of specific policies that might be related to that, colleagues at the Productivity Commission have done some absolutely fantastic work, and I recommend having a look at that. And obviously, the federal government have also got their own agenda. In terms of how we think about it and look at it and how it comes into our thinking, we're really observing those trends. I say we can't influence them, but really thinking about what they mean for the pace of sustainable real wages growth in particular, and what they mean about the size of the economy and our capacity to produce the goods and services that we all consume every day. So if we become more productive, all other things equal, then the economy is bigger than it otherwise would be. And I say that's the fundamental for improving living standards, which on a very basic level for the country is a great outcome. So we're more observing those types of trends and how they come through over time. What we can see from history, and it won't be a surprise, I'm sure, to say to people that it does take time for these trends to really embed themselves in a business. It's not like you sort of invest in the cloud technology or you bring AI into your business and suddenly it transforms what you can do and you're twice as productive on day two as you were day one. We know and we can see it does take time to diffuse. It takes time for us all to learn how to use it. I'm sure we can sympathize with that in our day-to-day work. You get a new software program and you're better at using it 6 months down the track than you were on day one. So we know it takes time, typically a couple of years, even longer. So these are very long trends that we're seeing, and we'll have to observe and see how they play out over time. But say, stronger productivity growth is a very good thing, all other things equal. And so that's something that I think everyone would like to see.
Terrific. As a former journalist, I can ask questions till I'm blue in the face, but I might pause now and see if we've got any questions from the floor. I think there's a roving mic. I think Melissa's got one here. If you'd like to ask a direct question about interest rates, Sarah's ready and willing.
I'm just interested in the bank's views on the risks of stagflation in Australia, the spectre of higher interest rates and no growth at the same time.
I was certainly willing to discuss, but perhaps not willing to completely talk about what the board are going to do. I would never speculate on that. But in terms of the outlook, look, it's something that we're obviously looking at and considering and mindful of how all of those dynamics come together. So right now, you're right, we do have higher inflation. Obviously, interest rates right now are higher than they have been in the recent past, and growth is has definitely slowed quite markedly. So all of that coming together is our current conditions. I suppose in the context of historically what was stagflation, thinking back, say, to the 1970s and the early 1980s, that is a different time. We did have much higher inflation rates then, and in some periods of time there, much slower growth as well. So I'm not sure that we're exactly there now, but we are constantly mindful and watching and understanding how our policy settings are having an impact and those other trends that are playing through the economy. So just generally observing what's happening and being really forward-looking and mindful of the risks, definitely that's all part of the job.
Well, I might, if we don't have another question from the floor, I might jump in with another one. Commodity prices, key driver of the economy. There's a number of individuals in the room who represent mining and natural resources companies. What's the RBA's position in terms of the outlook there? And in particular, do you have any views around the rise of critical minerals and how that may drive the economy in the context of being particularly having historically reliant on coal and iron ore?
Yeah, so commodity prices, we certainly track them very closely. They're a really important source of income for the economy, for our mining sector, but it flows back through in terms of government revenues and into the workers in those sectors and what have you. So it's certainly something that we track, and we can see there has been a bit of a rebound in the last few months. Some commodity prices more than others. Copper's moved quite a bit, for example. But generally speaking, we have seen a bit of a pickup, and that's actually quite consistent with the global outlook, where there has been a little bit of a turn in momentum. It's nothing too strong. It's not anything like a boom, but it's not unexpected that globally momentum made a trough at the end of last year, beginning of this year, and is now picking up a little. And we talked about that in our May SMP. In terms of that structural shift you're talking about, and we would consider, and we're always very mindful of structural shifts more broadly. Yes, we're very actively looking at what the clean energy transition means for the economy, how that's going to play through, the dynamics of what sectors are going to be perhaps smaller as a share of GDP over time, and which ones are going to grow relatively rapidly because demand for their products is going to increase. And so critical minerals are part of that, but obviously there's many, many facets to that. And that's certainly going to be something that we'll track very closely over the next 5-10 years and beyond that. This is not something that happens quickly. It's going to take a bit of time. So yeah, something we're mindful of, and we're expecting those dynamics to play through. But like everybody else, we'll observe what happens, how the world responds to this transition, not just us here, and what that means for our economy.
Great. I think we have another question.
Yeah. Thanks. I had two. One is in terms of the domestic economy. Mm-hmm. Talked about the sort of soft/weak consumer. Mm-hmm. Which income brackets, age groups, or other profile is feeling it the most, do you think? Mm-hmm. And the second question is, you talk about keeping an eye on the international mm-hmm. landscape. In particular, which country or region mm-hmm. do you monitor most closely, mm-hmm. and which aspect of that country/region's economy mm-hmm. Are you most kind of concerned about and watching closely?
Yeah, so I mentioned earlier the card spending data that our largest banks now publish, so you can all go and have a look at that. That's one of the best sources that we have for that disaggregated household spending. What we can see there is that by age, they're reporting that generally younger people are seeing more of a squeeze in terms of their spending, and then it sort of cascades up through the age brackets from there. But as I said earlier on, we think of it in the context of what are the constraints or what's happening to the dynamics around income for and what might be driving that, and explaining it that way rather than linking it to age per se. In terms of the international economy, what we're monitoring there, It won't be a surprise to hear that we definitely spend a lot of our time focused on China. It is our largest trading partner by quite some way, and so we do need to understand the dynamics there, and so we have a team that focuses on that. And in the context of China in particular, like everyone else, we're certainly looking at balancing out what's happening in terms of their net export position and demand for their products, and there's perhaps a bit of strength there from the start of this year. But we can see domestically they've clearly got some weakness, particularly in their property sector and the structural change that are happening there, but also in terms of consumer spending and that returning to a pre-COVID trend. So there's balances and different pushes and pulls through China's economy, and we're tracking all of those very closely.
Terrific. Probably got room, time for one more question. Just at the back there.
Thanks. Sarah, this is Swati from Bloomberg News. We have seen an increase in the unemployment, youth unemployment rate over the past 18 months. What does that say about the labor market, and is this a precursor of a marked slowing that might be coming? Mm. Thanks.
Yeah, and we're tracking all of that information too. So we look at the labor market and think about it very holistically, and so we're really trying to gauge what's happening to what we call full employment. So that's considering the number of people that are working, but also the hours they might be working, whether or not people want to work more hours, what's happening to job vacancies, all of that information. So the youth unemployment rate is one of many metrics that we track. What we can see generally happening through the labour market, that it is softening gradually. And so we're seeing job vacancies track down a little bit. We are seeing the unemployment rate, the youth unemployment rate, tick up a little bit. The pace of employment growth has slowed a little bit. So all of that is consistent with the labour market softening. And as you can see in our latest forecast, we expect that to continue in a sort of gradual, relatively mild way compared to previous cycles. And so that's what we're really looking at. And you're absolutely right, and to earlier questions, as things unfold, if the speed of that softening changes, it doesn't fully line up with our forecast, then we'll obviously review that and update our forecast and our view accordingly. So it's a constant game in our job of tracking what's happening, of adapting, updating our view, what has played out the way we expected, what hasn't, and why. And so bringing all of that together to advise the board on what we think is going to happen going forward, that's the job.
Thank you. Well, I might bring this session to a close, and thank you, Sarah, for what's been a very illuminating and engaging session. It's wonderful to see the RBA has an individual of your capability and experience there working on it, so I somewhat feel more reassured, which is wonderful. So if you could please join me in thanking Sarah.
Thank you.